This episode of Continuing Mission is brought to you by the wonderful patrons of Trek FM who support us through Patreon. If you love Star Trek discussion, visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how you can help and even become a part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And we thank everyone for their support.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Continuing Mission, our look at the ways in which fans are keeping Star Trek alive. I'm your host, Dennis Castello, and the primary focus of this show is on the fan series, or independent productions, that tell new stories set in the Star Trek universe. With me today is my co-host, Brandon Shea Mutala. Hello, Brandon. Thanks for coming on board our continuing mission.
Hey, how's it going, Dennis? Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome, Brandon. I'm happy to have a co-pilot with me today. In this episode, Brandon and I are joined by Tommy Kraft, the primary creative force behind Star Trek Horizon. If you're not familiar with Star Trek Horizon, it's a fan film set in the post-Enterprise era, where a pre-Federation coalition of allied planets is at war with the Romulan Empire. The completed film is set to hit the internet in less than 2 weeks and is very highly anticipated. Tommy is not only the writer and director of Star Trek Horizon, he's also doing much of the special effects himself, as well as composing all the music. Now, Tommy's been on Continuing Mission before, and he's a regular guest host on Warp 5, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to the series Enterprise. So today we're going to get some additional background on Tommy and kind of fill in the gaps on the project. So let's take the turbo lift to the briefing room and begin our discussion with Tommy Kraft.
I'd like to welcome our special guest today. This is Tommy Kraft joining us to talk about his independent production, Star Trek Horizon. How are you doing today, Tommy?
Oh, I'm lovely, thank you, and thanks for having me on. It's great to be back on Trek FM once again. I've been on a lot of shows here, and it's always fun to come around and shoot the breeze with you guys.
Yeah, you're very welcome. We're very happy to have you with us here today. So why don't we begin? Why don't you tell us about how you discovered Star Trek and why is it that you decided that you wanted to make your own Star Trek movie?
Well, you know, how I discovered it really is, I mean, that's just pretty common. You know, I grew up with Star Trek, as so many, many people have. You know, I was a young kid, and I think I caught a TNG episode, or my dad showed it to me or something, I don't know. And, you know, as a young kid, that just kind of, you know, Star Trek gets you. You know, it's one of those really interesting things. And, you know, just as a side note, when I go back and I rewatch TNG, I'm always really shocked at how weird of a kid I must have been that I liked that show, because it's so talky and it's so story driven. There's hardly no space battles or anything. But, you know, that's where I started. And of course, the show that I really grew up on were the two that I grew up on were DS9 and Enterprise, and of course Voyager, but those were the ones I watched the most. And so, you know, that's where it started. And then as I grew older, I kind of fell out of Star Trek for a while. It's not that I stopped watching it or stopped liking it. I just kind of wasn't into it as much, as that happens once you grow up. And then around 2012, I had this really bad depression hit, which is still around, kind of comes and goes in waves, but it's Enterprise. So one of the big things with depression is what sometimes can help you cope is you just sit around and you binge watch TV shows. And so I did that with Castle. I watched like 5 seasons of Castle really quickly. But I liked the show, but it didn't grab me like Enterprise did. When I rewatched Enterprise for the first time since I was a kid, you know, something about it really struck me. And it helped me, which I know probably sounds corny to some people, cope with that depression at the time. And that character of Captain Archer really spoke to me because it helped me make a lot of changes that I needed to make in my life at the time, because he is the explorer. It's the whole idea of that show, the explorer's heart, I think really just grabbed me at the right time. And it encouraged me to explore. And so it became the show that was very personally important to me. And it became something I was very passionate about. And on top of that, it's just a good show. And so that's why, like, as opposed to the fact that I also was binge watching Castle at the time, like, that's, you know, I didn't make a Castle fan film. I love DS9, TNG, and Voyager, but I didn't make fan films of those. Though I've thought about it over the years. The ideas I've mused, but yeah, I mean that's why Enterprise is important to me. And so, you know, and also being a filmmaker, this is like ever since I was, you know, at least 10 years old, this is what I wanted to do. So it just seemed like the right time to make my first feature-length film, and it also seemed like the right project, and it just kind of happened, and Enterprise had hanging story threads due to its cancellation, and I decided that I was going to try to take my best stab at closing up those story threads that they didn't get to close.
Tell us a little bit about the Horizon project itself. So I watched the trailer for it, and, you know, it doesn't look like Archer. It looks like a different crew. I mean, I'm guessing Horizon's the name of the ship here. So we've got a whole different new ship and crew and everything like that. So why would you go a different route rather than what most people do with their fan productions, which would be making a ship about, you know, Kirk and them, where you would be making a ship about Archer, or sorry, a film about Archer?
Well, I think due to the efforts of James Colley originally, like, he was the first, at least the one that I know of, the first one to really make that big foray into fan films where they portray the original characters with different actors. And so now it's kind of accepted. You just, you know, it works. And so I don't want to say that, you know, portraying all those characters with new actors is kind of cheesy, but I think it tends to be. Sometimes it works, like with New Voyages and with Continues. But, you know, I love Enterprise so much in the characters that I knew there would be no way that I'd be able to portray those characters and make it a good film as well, unless I could get the original cast. And I knew that was out of the question because I didn't have the money and resources to do that. So always from the start, my goal was to tell the story of another crew. And we know that there were other NX ships in the pipeline for production when Enterprise, when they had their last episode. We know they were planning on building more. So it was a natural progression of the Enterprise storyline to have the NX-04, which is our lead ship. And the ship is actually the Discovery. Horizon is the name of that pink or purple planet that we see in the trailers and in the opening scene and all that. It just seemed like the right thing to do. I didn't think there was any way I could make it even remotely good or believable if I was recasting Captain Archer. And so it was about, and this is also exciting too, because as a filmmaker and as a writer, I got to develop my own characters and I got to tell my own stories. So I didn't have to necessarily be beholden to what made Captain Archer, Captain Archer. I could have my own captain and my own crew with their own issues and their own conflicts. And I think that's much more interesting from a viewership standpoint than trying to retell the stories we've already told with new people, because so much of what makes those characters great are the actors. And so for me, it was just always, I had to go in with my own crew and my own stories.
Let me go kind of go back and learn a little bit more about you. Where are you from? What's your day job? What do you do when you're not making Star Trek? Things like that.
Well, I'm from Michigan, South Central Michigan area, born and raised. My day job is I freelance for film. And so sometimes I do visual effects for indie films or commercials. Sometimes I'm shooting commercials, directing commercials. I've done weddings, you know, a lot of wedding videos. And I've also done a lot of short films, my own short films and so on. So that's basically me. I don't have a big person job, as they say. And this has always been I've said it before, but the film is the woman in my life and has been for a long time. And, you know, it's my life in a lot of ways. And so
sure.
That's been all I've really been focusing on. And the whole time I've been making Horizon, I've either been doing that or doing the freelance stuff in the meantime.
Well, I got to say, after watching that trailer, she's a sexy looking woman.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll let her know you said so.
Sounds great. So Enterprise is your favorite Star Trek series. So what's your favorite Enterprise episode?
You know, I just had somebody ask me this the other day, and I couldn't answer the question. It's like when somebody asks me who my favorite Ninja Turtle is, and I have to say, like, you know, it's like trying to pick your favorite kid. You just can't. You love them all for different reasons. But, you know, if I had to pick some sort of favorite something, I'd have to say my favorite season is season 3. I think they just had so many great episodes in that season, and I love this indie arc and what they did with it and how they tied all the other arcs in throughout that season with the sphere builders and everything. And I just think it worked really well. But, I mean, I'm not one of those people that hates on the first two seasons either. I think the whole show was great. And there's really, honestly, only a couple episodes I didn't think were spectacular, but I still enjoy them all. But no, short answer, I can't pick a favorite.
I definitely can. My favorite's Future Tense.
That is a good episode. I will grant you that. but I will also counter with either Damage or Azadi Prime. So
I think Damage is my favorite.
Yeah, I mean the moral stories and the character arc of Archer in that episode is fantastic. I think it went places that, you know, a Star Trek TV show never really had before. The closest you came, you know, was DS9 with some of their great episodes, like In the Pale Moonlight.
So did you go to school for filmmaking at all, or is it just something that you kind of picked up on the fly?
No, I actually went to school for music because my mom worked at a college here, Albion College, and so I got free tuition, which was a great deal. And music has always been really important in my life. It's always been like my other like big passion was music. And so because I got the free tuition, that's like you know, I'm going to Albion. I got free tuition, so that was the deal. But what I will say is I spent most of my class time writing scripts and outlines for stories. Now, I'm sure it probably looked like I was taking notes, and I did on occasion. And I will say, like, I wish I would have learned more now. You know, I started to like learning by the end. But I'm still massively in debt, though, because I still took out the student loans to buy film equipment. So for me, it was, you know, I went to school for music, for guitar and voice, and in the meantime, I was still massively working on the film. So the artsy-fartsy thing has always been a big part of my life, and it's always just been my main pursuit.
Well, it shows. It definitely shows. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. That's great to hear. Believe me, after spending all this time and work and money on it, I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
I think that everyone's very excited to see the finished film. I know it's got a lot of buzz on the Babel Conference and other Star Trek forums.
Well, I certainly hope so. Thank you. And, you know, it's been over 3 years now. It's December of 2012 when I first started. So it's been a long road getting from there to here. I hope that it's well received.
The thing I find most amazing about the whole story is that you're doing so much by yourself. It seems like a one-man band. Is that the case?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, there's of course the actors, so I can't discount them. And there's been a few people here and there throughout who have contributed their time. For instance, Alexander Klemm, who made the Vulcan ships that you see in the trailers and in the short clip I released. There's three Vulcan ships. He modeled those for me. Ryan McClure modeled our Romulan warbird or bird of prey. And, you know, Eric Henry did concept art for me and designed the Romulan helmet, and then I modeled it. So there's been people here and there who have helped, but largely overall it's been mainly me. So I wrote it, directed, edited, cinematography, wrote all the music, of course, which I'm sure we'll talk about, obviously. And did the costumes, made all the costumes myself. Mm-hmm. and did all the green screen work myself and created most of the virtual sets myself. So, I mean, this is, and also I know it probably sounds like it now that I'm just trying to toot my own horn. I'm not, but cause, I mean, it's just what it, you know, it's just, I've spent the last 3 years engrossed in this project, and it's been a tremendous, tremendous learning experience, because now I know, you know, the next time I go onto a project, when I talk to a costume designer or a visual effects person or whoever, I know what I'm asking them because I've done it myself. And that has been absolutely invaluable to me. And it's also what's allowed me to save a lot of money too, because I haven't had to pay a whole bunch of, you know, quote unquote professionals to do it all.
Sure.
So with a fan film like this, I'm curious, you spoke a little bit about, you know, depression and how Enterprise kind of got you through a rough time in your life, but to take on a massive behemoth project as making a film all by yourself, like, it seems just so overwhelming. And so why a film? Why make a fan film of your own when it's going to cost so much of your own money? It's going to take so much of your time. It's going to take so much of your personal time away from this. Why a film instead of a book or something like that?
Well, the simple answer is because I'm a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's J.J. Abrams, for instance. I know this will be controversial, but J.J. Abrams and George Lucas are like my two biggest heroes. When I was growing up, the people I idolized were people like J.J. Abrams and Steven Spielberg. And so for me, that's always been my goal. I've always wanted to be the director. And so, you know, it wasn't like I came to this project and I thought, what's the best way I can honor Enterprise? Am I going to make a game? Am I going to make a movie? Am I going to make a book? It was always just obvious because I'm a filmmaker. I thought, well, I'm going to make a movie. I might as well make an Enterprise movie. So that's the main thing. But you're right. It is very, very overwhelming. And it's very much a one day at a time thing. And, you know, if you'd asked me when I started it, if I'd still be working on it in 2016, I would have said no. I expected to be done sooner. But, you know, it's a one day at a time thing. And it does get overwhelming. There have been a lot of times throughout this where I didn't want to continue and I wanted to quit, and it was very hard, but you know, you just have to keep going, and the passion helps you do that. And the depression doesn't help either, because that's still there. But you know, the whole movies is one thing that helps me cope, and Enterprise gave me an additional level of passion, I guess, that I otherwise wouldn't have had.
Sure. Well, what have you found most challenging in the process?
I've thought about this because a few other people have asked me, and honestly, I think the hardest part is just staying motivated and keeping going throughout the whole thing. Because for me, and again, not to toot my own horn, but the technical aspect of it isn't usually that difficult for me, because I like to do it so much. It's not because, you know, I think I'm really smart or anything. It's just, I really like to make movies. So if there's a challenge and I don't know how to do it, I'll figure it out. You know, that's just what you do. But, you know, when you spend a lot of time working on a project, it gets, especially when it's, you do it in a vacuum like I have, where it's basically a one-man band thing. You're not really working with other people. You're not showing it to other people. You know, it gets very hard to continue. And so, yeah, the hardest part for me was staying motivated and staying positive throughout the whole thing. And there's been a lot of times where I've just felt like, you know, F it. Nobody's going to watch it anyway. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to like it. You know, it's not going to do anything for my career. Why even bother? So, you know, those doubts have definitely been there. And, you know, trying to continue through those, I think, would be the biggest challenge.
Sure.
How long was it before you were able to produce the trailer? How much work had it been?
Well, there was our first teaser trailer, which came out in early 2014, I think. And so that would be around a year after production, or a year after I'd started in general. We'd shot a little bit. We'd had a couple shooting days, but not many. The second trailer came out in October of 14, and we'd shot probably half the movie at that point, or at least a good portion of it. And then by the time of our final trailer, the movie had been finished shooting, and it had just been post-production all the way. So it's been very much work in progress the whole time when releasing the trailers. And there was, you know, there was a lot of unfinished stuff when I made the trailers.
I know, because I've been to film school and I've worked on films and made some films of my own, that there are always those unexpected things that happen. Usually the unexpected things that happen are problems, but occasionally they are happy accidents and they actually improve the story or the production efforts. Anything like that happen to you?
There's only one good surprise, and that's when a few months ago, probably like 6 months ago, I made a video blog. And the bad surprise was, in the video blog, I announced that the guy who was going to help me with sound design for the film had to step down. That was really unfortunate, because that meant yet another thing, like I was going to have to then take on sound design the whole film myself. So I made a video blog, I announced this, and I just said in the blog, hey, if anybody wants to help sound design, I'd appreciate it. And this guy, Michael Huang, and he'll forgive me if I mispronounce his name, I still have not learned it, but he emailed me. And he just said, like, hey, I'll sound design your whole movie for you. He's a professional. He has a studio. He does, like, TV shows and TV movies and stuff. And I was like, I just want to be sure, just to be clear here, I can't bait you. You know, this is a lot of work. And he's like, yeah, I know. I just want to sound design a Star Trek movie. And I'm like, well, cool. And, you know, so I sent him, you know, we talked and I sent him the stuff. And you know, once he sent me his work on the film, I was absolutely blown away. He actually did know his stuff.
Wow.
And he was really good. And, you know, the first time I saw the movie with all that sound design, it was like that was the moment when it came together. Because, you know, I'd been working on it for 3 years and never seen it that way. And it was really cool. And so that was, like, probably the best thing to come of this movie. Especially because, too, now I'd like to work with him on my future projects, too. So it's a, you know, it's a great connection.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, like, there haven't really been that many surprises. Just the usual challenges you have, especially when shooting, you know, a no-budget film. You know, ideally you shoot in 15 days, 15 to 20 for this kind of, you know, low-budget thing. But we had 15 to 20, but it took us a year to shoot those 15 to 20 days. Because, and, you know, most of those days, the actors couldn't all be there together. So since we shot on green screen, like, I'd say more than half the scenes in the movie are shot one person at a time.
Sure.
And so those had to all be assembled. So that was a big challenge, coordinating all that. And that was a big part of the frustration, too. But otherwise, yeah, no, nothing too terribly. There's one crazy thing I didn't mention. I almost died. Literally, because I'm in Jackson in Michigan, and then there's Detroit. Everybody's heard of Detroit, of course, which is about 2 hours from me. I drove out there in my brother's truck because I had a bunch of crap to take out there, and we shot in this, like, photographer's studio that my lead actor knew. And we were out there for 2 days. I stayed the night. We shot a bunch of stuff. On the way home, I was sick. I was dead tired. And the truck started fishtailing. I lost control, flipped, went off the road. This was on the highway. Absolutely terrifying. Totaled my brother's truck. And that was the only car accident I've ever been in. I wasn't even speeding. But that was a big surprise, too. During production. So this has been quite an adventuresome production in a lot of ways.
Wow, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's not surprising, though, you know, that at USC, it's not uncommon for students who are in the midst of filmmaking just to be so sleep deprived that they just fall asleep behind the wheel and get into accidents. I mean, it happened a number of times while I was going there.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't doubt it. And, you know, the thing is, I know I didn't fall asleep because I had someone with me and we were talking. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm sure it was just because I was sick and so tired anyway. I was just distracted. And he had said to me, like, I was driving. He said, hey, you're going into the median. And I swerved, you know, as anybody does when they say, look how you're going into the median. And having never driven a truck before, the thing just, you know, it went crazy and went off the road. Yeah, and then the fun part of the story is I remember we were talking actually about sex and porn at the time. And when his wife picked us up, he apparently had forgotten that. And he says, do you remember what we were talking about at the time with his wife in the car? I don't know if it would have been awkward. I just said no and moved on.
Good job.
I didn't. Yeah, thank you. I didn't need that stress in addition to everything else.
So I have a question for you here. So for all the aspiring filmmakers that are listening to this podcast right now, so what kind of equipment are you using for video recording, for cameras, for microphones, for things like that?
Yeah, the camera is just the Blackmagic Cinema Camera, EF mount, 2.5K. So it was like, you know, the first version of their Blackmagic camera that was really popular. And I chose that because you get 2.5K RAW on it, which is really, really great for low-budget filmmaking when you're doing green screen because you need all that resolution and compression-free footage. In terms of microphones, it's just it's a regular shotgun microphone that I've had. It's literally the first one I ever got when I started making films. And it's been a great mic for me over the years. I don't remember the exact name, but it was like, you know, $100-$200. And in terms of software, you know, it's the usual stuff, Adobe Premiere, Adobe After Effects, Autodesk 3ds Max, you know, PF Track for the 3D motion tracking, and V-Ray for my 3D rendering, and, you know, other various assorted items, you know, throughout there too. I could give you the name of my sewing machine if you really need to know, but it was a cheapo, like $80-$100 one that I got on Amazon. But you know, it's nothing crazy, honestly, that I've done in terms of gear on this film. And you know, that could be a huge side rant I could go on too, is that, believe me, I would love to have a Red Epic. You know, for anybody who doesn't know, that's like a really nice, really expensive camera, but you don't need it.
No, your Blackmagic will do you just fine.
It will. And honestly, I could have probably done it without a Blackmagic too, but I figured, you know, I really wanted just to be sure to have that extra resolution and ability to adjust my colors with the RAW as much in post.
So the screenplay that you wrote, how long did it take you to finish it to a good draft? How many drafts did it take for you to get it to the final product?
I think it was somewhere between 3 to 6 drafts. Now, each draft wasn't a total rewrite. Sometimes a draft would consist of, I would make a new draft and then I would just remove scenes in that new draft and you know, build as a new draft. Other times it would be a pretty substantial change. The total writing time, I'd say, was probably a couple of months. You know, once I get, it doesn't always happen, but once I'm able to get into the groove of a screenplay, I can usually do it pretty quick. And so if that is in fact quick, I don't know, maybe that's a normal speed, but you know, just it, I got that done in a few months. And whilst I was doing the writing, I was starting to work on the visual effects for the film, and the screenplay, I think, was like 136 pages when I finished it and its final draft.
What advice would you have to someone who is considering starting their own fan project, say, of any stripe?
Yeah, you know, that's a hard one for me to answer because, in all honesty, I don't necessarily feel like I'm like the greatest qualified person to give advice. But, you know, what's worked for me, I guess, is you first have to decide what it is you want to do with your project. So for me, my first, number one for me, first and foremost, has always been, I want to be the best filmmaker I can be, and I want to do whatever I need to do to best facilitate telling a good story. And so in this case, it happened to be a Star Trek story. I can't comment on my own ability, like the quality of my ability, but one thing I think I can comment on is my work ethic. And I know that, like, once I start a project, I put everything I have into that project. The number one thing I see with fan films, independent films, low budget films, I'm talking to people and it frustrates me to no end because they say they want to be filmmakers. And of course I say this having not actually quote unquote succeeded myself, so take it with a grain of salt. But you know, we'll be talking and they'll have an issue with their project and, you know, they don't know how to do something or whatever, or, you know, they do something and it comes out poorly. And I say, well, you should probably redo that. And they say, well, it's not that big a deal. And so to me, it's like, you know, if you just want to make a Star Trek fan film because you like Star Trek, then that's fine. Because, you know, you're not setting out to be, to you know, to have a career in film. But, you know, if you want to, and whether or not I become successful, quote unquote, I can at least, you know, console myself with the fact that I tried my hardest and I put everything I had into it and I did my best and I learned as much as I could. And I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, just, you know, as an example, I see a lot of Kickstarters where people are asking for money and they just, you know, there's a lot of stuff in their Kickstarter videos or, you know, their page is really sparse. They have spelling errors, you know, stuff like that. To me, that speaks so many volumes about what the quality of your project is going to be. And so, you know, I guess the best way to sum it up is I've always said that when working with, I guess this especially applies to actors because that's sure. The group of people I've worked with the most. I'd much rather work with an actor who's not very talented, but tries their hardest and comes to set on time and knows their lines than work with somebody who is really talented, but doesn't care about the film, doesn't know their lines, doesn't come on time, and just, you know, doesn't have a great attitude. I think that that the attitude and the work that you put into it is much more important than your skill level at any given time.
Sure.
But as a caveat to that, just to wrap up this incredibly long answer, I will say that, again, coming from the standpoint of wanting to be a filmmaker, you don't want to do a fan film as your first project. You know, this was a huge undertaking for me and very difficult in a lot of ways, and I'd done a lot of short films beforehand. It would have been smarter to do a lower no-budget drama for my first feature. It was really crazy to take on a sci-fi feature-length epic. But, you know, that's what worked for me. I thought that I could do it.
Sure.
So you have to know thyself as well. And so I guess just keep that in mind. There's a lot of overzealousness, too, when people my age and like me start projects. So do a lot of short films first, you know, do comedy sketches. I love comedy sketches. I do a lot of them just for fun. They're great practice for writing, directing, cinematography, editing, and everything. And then when you feel confident, do your fan film. And just approach it from wanting to make the best film you can and approach it from wanting to learn as much as possible. And that's what's worked for me.
That's fantastic advice, Tommy. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Continuing Mission and talking about Star Trek Horizon. We're really looking forward to seeing the finished film.
And don't forget to tune in to part two of the interview on Melodic Treks, where we talk about the musical aspect of the Horizon project. Thanks very much, Tommy, for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a blast as always, and I can't wait to also be on Melodic Treks.
It's been fun talking with Tommy Kraft today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Geordi is the one that's like, you know what? No, you're wrong. You're wrong about
Data. I'm going to drop a challenge right here, and Data's totally going to step up to the plate, and you're going to get served, Plasky.
And that's how LaForge created Moriarty.
I'm not saying it turned out good, but I mean, he had good intentions.
The Orb.
The Wadi, a fun-loving race from the Gamma Quadrant, arrive at DS9 eager to play a game with Sisko and the crew, one that appears to be a matter of life and death. All right, so are we moving along, Matthew?
Oh, we're moving along.
Is there any redeeming value?
The Ready Room.
He's carrying in the lamb chop sock puppet saying, she stayed at her post.
While Charlie Horse ran.
While Charlie Horse ran.
To the journey!
She has a holographic boyfriend that malfunctions. That can mean only one thing. She knows how he malfunctions.
Well, I hear it's common in a lot of guys his age.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I haven't seen Mean Girls.
You haven't seen Mean Girls.
I know. Everybody wants me to see Mean Girls.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you have to see Mean Girls. I mean, after Josie and the Pussycats, though.
Oh, how could I forget Josie and the Pussycats?
The 602 Club.
I actually like when they bring in the big container for the brain fish at the beginning.
That's so weird.
Yeah, and it really opens mysterious. Up and it's, you know, speaking through the...
And all the minions that have to mop up after it at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
It's like a slug trail.
You can actually see one of the guys while he's talking, kind of wandering around, mopping up. I was like, what is that guy doing?
Literary Treks.
You're totally right that when Atonement was done, I really did feel like everybody needed a break.
Like a Kit Kat bar?
There wouldn't be challenges and obstacles and things, but I wanted the next sort of series of adventures that they faced for a while to be more infused with the sense of wonder that sort of underpins all of Trek.
Women at Warp.
You can always count on DC Fontana to Vulcan things up, and I for one appreciate her for that.
Get Vulcan with it. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Get Vulcan with it.
Meta Treks.
Don't tell me you haven't wondered what it's like to be Patrick Stewart.
Actually, I've wondered. I've often wondered what it's like to be the Shat.
There's no way to know. It's one of a kind.
He's one of a kind. He's one of a kind.
Melodic Treks.
But it's basically from a motivation of not treating the audience stupid. You know, treating them that they have dreams, they have imagination, they have hope, they have fear. They have all those things, and the music plays on that.
And introducing Saturday Morning Trek, a show about the animated series and all things Trek in the 1970s.
Like, six episodes counts as a season? This isn't The British, okay? This isn't...
This is two seasons of Sherlock. Come on.
This isn't Sherlock. Yes, I've been waiting for several years to see more Star Trek, which is like Sherlock. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But From There to Here is also a good podcast you should listen to.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. Those perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you'd like to contact us with feedback or suggestions for the show, or if you have a fan project that you would like to discuss with us, you can contact us in several different ways. You can use the form at trekfm/contact. You can also leave us a voicemail. Look in the sidebar on the Continuing Mission show page at Trek FM, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. Our Twitter handle is at Trek FM. We can be found on Facebook at Trek FM. Or you can join the discussion on Trek FM's listeners-only group on Facebook called The Babel Conference. Type The Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at Trek FM and click Discussion on the menu bar. The Babel Conference is a closed group, but if you ask to join, we'll let you right in and you can join the discussion. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of Continuing Mission on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, Brandon, where can our listeners find you on the internet and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me on the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. I'm always on there talking Trek. Every once in a while, I'm on Twitter, at Brandon Metella. And you can find me hosting new episodes of Melodic Treks here on the network, as well as many episodes on our 50th anniversary rewatch project called From There to Here, where we talk about all of the episodes and movies in the franchise, and we talk about them two at a time. And where can we find you, Dennis?
I can always be found on the Babel Conference on Facebook, and my Twitter handle is at Dennis Castello. We'd like to acknowledge the rest of the Trek FM team, without which this or any of our podcasts would not be possible. C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher of Trek FM, executive producers Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Norman Lau, Aaron Harvey, the Trek FM's art director, Will Wynn, our content manager, and Richard Marquez, our production manager. Thanks for joining us, and see you on the next mission.